Welcome back, everybody. Let you have your last sip of coffee or whatever there. Just before we come to the question and answer time, I want to let you know about next week's session. Next week, we'll be looking at the global nuclear system and Canada's deadly secret. Speaker will be Dr. Jim Harding. And it looks at Saskatchewan's uranium mining. It's at the front end of the global nuclear system. And Dr. Jim Harding is the author of Canada's Deadly Secret, Saskatchewan Uranium and the Global Nuclear System. So it should be a very interesting conversation, and we hope that many of you will be able to join us next week. This is the only microphone we have today, so if you have a question, I would invite you to come forward, use this microphone, and we encourage people to please ask from the microphone, not from their seat, because then everybody can hear. We want to remind you to keep your comments brief and short and get to the question, and I will indeed be enforcing that. And we want to welcome Larry back to this podium here.
It is hard to know where to start when you disagree from the ground up, but let me start with this. You cited Darwin as saying that the issue of intermediate varieties and how many of them we could find in the fossil record was obviously an important objection against his theory. That's a widely cited quote, especially by people on your side of the debate. But, you know, this is in The Origin of Species, which dates to 1859. And yet what Darwin did immediately was not just, you know, throw that out and say, gee, I've got a problem there. This is the introduction to a very long section of the book in which he explains why the geological record is, as we find it, extremely incomplete, and why there are many fossils out there, presumably, which we haven't found, and why... as a result, we shouldn't expect to find many, many close intermediates. But, of course, shortly after the publication of Origin of Species, a fossil was found in the limestones in Germany, Solnhofen limestones, which were mined not because there were a whole bunch of paleontologists looking for evidence of evolution, but just because people were looking for good stone to use for making prints. A fossil of a strange creature that came to be named Archaeopteryx, which displayed feathers but had a bony skeleton which is very much like a small dinosaur, very much like, for instance, a Compsognathus. Now, that's an intermediate, and there are many others in the fossil record that have been found more recently, Tiktaalik in Baffin Island and so on. So I'd like to hear you address both the question of why you cite that quote from Darwin without noting that actually Darwin went on to address the problem in detail, and how you respond today to the rich fossil record, which reveals many intermediates that actually do apparently connect the branches of the tree you denied at the end.
Well, let me just go back a bit here. I'm glad you asked that question. This one, I'm just going to find the Archaeopteryx. This is ornithologist and evolutionary biologist Alan Fidicia. And he has no religious affiliation, and he says that there is no evidence that birds evolved from dinosaurs. He says that Archaeopteryx was a fully formed bird, and people think it's a reptile because it has a claw on it, but ostriches have claws on themselves. He says the timeline is all wrong. He said it's difficult for large earth-bound creatures to evolve flight from the ground up. The supposed downy-like fuzz or feather-like coverings really don't resemble feathers, but more scales. The difference between scales and feathers is very small. This was an interview just a couple of years ago in Discover magazine. Feathers preserved as specimens are secondary flightless birds. So he's making no connection here between reptiles and dinosaurs, or reptiles and birds, I should say. Feathers wouldn't evolve just for insulation. They thought, well, maybe these reptiles, these dinosaurs, had feathers evolving. I don't know how they think to the point where a feather gets evolved. It's a very highly complex thing, a feather. He said it would be more prudent to have to insulate with hair instead of feathers. He says Archaeoraptor was a forgery, and he is skeptical of feathered dinosaur fossils because the Chinese fossil trade is big business. He says many museums have promoted the idea of birds as living dinosaurs. They have spent a huge amount of money on exhibits. Paleontologists have stacked their careers saying birds evolved from dinosaurs. This is from an evolutionary ornithologist interviewed in Discover magazine. So you can see where I'm coming from. You know, we all come from different presuppositions, and I'm coming from the presupposition that there's a creator. So when I see an article like that, obviously I'm going to pull that up. If you're coming from the presupposition of evolution, you're going to be looking for articles that are against, if you don't want to believe in creationism, you do that. So, but here is a guy who knows his stuff, and he's saying that the whole aspect of birds evolving from dinosaurs, it just doesn't fit in the geologic record, and it doesn't make sense to him. And so, there you go.
Just a reminder to give your name before you ask your question.
How about the question about Darwin? Why did you use that quote without noting or remarking, even giving him the courtesy of saying that he actually did answer that challenge in his own book right after that book?
Do you want to answer that now?
Well, I
there's a mic.
Sorry.
You wait a second.
I don't think he answered the challenge though, because when I look at the supposed transitional fossils, they are fully formed creatures. They're fully formed, every single one of them. I've gone to Talk Origins website is against creationism, and I've looked at every one that is listed there as a transitional fossil. I've looked up those fossils on the internet. Everyone is a fully formed fossil. You don't find a fossil with a half-developed lung. So, in my humble opinion, I don't think there are transitional fossils. They're fully formed creatures.
My name is Anthony. My name is Anthony, and I just had a question here. Do you know anything about how ancient man fits into creation? Because some creation books say that ancient man was smarter than we are today, and that they had more brain power, and that they made structures that we can't make today, like the pyramids, because that they were made very well and mathematically.
Thanks for the. Yes, I do believe that man was intelligent. In fact, the scripture says in Genesis that Cain built cities right off the bat. So I do believe that man is intelligent right from the very beginning, because he was created by an intelligent God. And it is difficult to understand how the pyramids were made. And one thing that we sort of underestimate is not only the brain power of people back then, but also just the human might of moving things during those times. And one person has speculated using kite technology how the pyramids were built. I'm not sure, but I would certainly agree with that. That people were very, very intelligent. And there are things that are found in archaeology, like a battery-type system, and you could go on and on. I haven't read up a lot about it in this area, but I would certainly agree with that.
I'm Howard Forsyth. I've lived nearly 100 years, and I've seen probably the most fantastic changes that the universe has ever observed. My question is what is your explanation for why religion is fast fading out in the history of the human race, and science is doing absolutely unbelievable things which we can marvel at and love and think are absolutely, absolutely wonderful. And some of this stuff in the Bible, which you quote so often, is pretty dangerous stuff. I've got a quote that says, "The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all of fiction. He's jealous and proud and petty." There's a whole bunch of this. Infanticidal, genocidal, and all kinds of other bad things. So I'm not terribly impressed with a pitch that says something that seems to be disappearing in our lives and getting less and less impressive as we learn more about the world we live in. What's your answer to that?
Well, latent in that question is that I'm against science. I'm not against science. Science has brought wonderful things. In fact, the scientific method, I would argue, came out of the Christian worldview with the insistence that there is order in the universe. And so many of the early scientists were Christians. So I'm not against science. But I would say this, that and you're right. Like, when you go to England today, less than 5% of people are really committed Christian in the British Isles. I remember reading about Charles Finney and many of the evangelists that went to England in the early 1800s. People were coming to Christ and becoming Christians left, right, and center. Revivals were breaking all over the place. When the theory of evolution began to take hold in the conscience of the general public, people wanted to leave what they perceived as the shackles of religion. And I can tell you today that when I was 19 years of age, I was shackled in trying to figure out what life was all about. I thought there was more to life than just living and getting married and having children and dying. And I was freed when I was 19 years of age. And I can attest to that concept of the abundant life in Christ, because, quite frankly, I would not be standing here today if it wasn't for Christ. It's a testimony. So I agree with you. But on the other hand, we see a tremendous growth in Christianity in South America and Africa and other Asian countries. And that's why myself, I have to be in the area of Christian apologetics, because I have to show people that it is not a blind faith. It is a faith that is reliable when we look at the things around us.
You've also used the term order several times. There's a fantastic amount of disorder and sin and Armageddon and all kinds of the last book of the Bible, Revelation. It's a terrible thing.
I would agree with you.
If you talk about order, you're in the wrong category.
That you brought up a very, very interesting point, because a lot of people think that there was no disconnect between the time God created things and now, but there was a disconnect. And that was when man decided to rebel against God, and the reason why we have sicknesses and diseases and in our world today is a result that man decided to choose to rebel against God. But there is hope, because Christ is going to bring a new order, a new heaven and earth, and through what he did on earth here, on the cross, on the resurrection, we have eternal life. So you make it, you raise a very good point, because some people look at the world and they say, well, how is it that we see some of these terrible things happening? And it is a result of man's sin. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. So there is a disconnect there. If we said that man is the way, God created man the way he is today, there's two aspects of man, very quickly. One, there's a sense of nobility. Man is very noble. He can do incredible things, as you said, with science. We can fly to the moon. We can help the poor. But we can also do some terrible things. And all you have to do is just look at your own life, the bitterness you might have towards other people, and the terrible things that happen. We see the two sides of man. He's noble. He's made in God's image. But he is also, there's a disconnect there. He is sinful. Why? Because man has rebelled against God. So there's a two aspect of man. And you've brought up a very good point. Very good point.
You go first.
Okay. Terry Shillington. Well, thanks for being here, Larry, and also thanks to Bryson Brown from last week for being here and engaging. And it's a connection with that I'd like to raise, and perhaps you can address some of my confusion. There was a distinction made last week between theories about the beginning of life and the theory of evolution. And my understanding is that evolutionists try to describe how they think life has progressed along a continuum that makes sense to the theory of evolution, whereas talking about the beginnings of life are apart from that. And I hear you putting the two together, and that confuses me. I wonder, for example, if you read the first chapter of Genesis and take it as a symbolic story as a faith story rather than a scientific treatise, why evolutionists don't have a lot to tell us about how that creation developed and became what it is today. So I don't have any trouble putting it together, and I wonder why evolution doesn't fit with your idea of an intelligent design.
That's another good question. Thank you so much. Well, there are creationists that are called theistic evolutionists. They believe that God used evolution. Again, when I look at the evidence that I look at, I don't see that. But you run into a major theological problem. You are basically saying, because God created everything good, and then when he created man, he said it was very good. Evolution is proposing that there was death and bloodshed and disease and survival of the fittest right from the very beginning. And the very reason why Christ came was not because there was death, disease, bloodshed, and survival of the fittest right from the beginning. The reason why he came was because when man rebelled, that's when death, bloodshed, disease entered into the world. That's when it entered into the world. The very reason why he came for that. So theologically, you're running into some major problems here because God said that everything was very good. And go from muck without a mind to Adam, you have that survival of the fittest, and it's just not revealed in Scripture. So theologically, I think people run into some real problems when they want to embrace theistic evolution. And like I said, I have some colleagues that do that. We have some good discussions, but I think that theologically and from the evidence that I look at, it doesn't have to be that way.
I was wondering why creation isn't taught alongside with evolution in the school system.
Well, obviously, I would like to have that. I guess what I would like to see, I don't know if I'm answering your questions, I guess what I would like to see is, you know, as soon as you use the term intelligent design, you know, red flags go all over the place. Oh, you're religious, or you're trying to propagate, you know, the Bible in school and something like that. And like I said before, you know, like when you look at that glass, when you look at that picture, you know, if you're walking down through the woods and you see rocks in the shape of SOS, you know that there is intelligence that brought that together. Very simple. So I guess I would say is, you know, I think that in our public schools, it's very difficult for teachers to raise the issue of intelligent design, or even beyond that, just to even question some of the problems that evolutionary theory. In fact, there is a movie coming out, and I can't remember the name now. Expel. Thank you so much. There's a movie coming out, and I don't know if it's going to be in Canada. I'm not sure.
April 18th.
Thank you. There's a movie, Expel, and they're interviewing people who have legitimate degrees, and they have their face darkened and their voices changed because they are so afraid to say that they believe that there is an intelligent designer, but they would be kicked out of their faculty. I am not exaggerating here. I hear from these people, and people are so afraid to say anything in regards to that. And this movie, I believe, will show that. But I would just say, can we not just be open to question the theory? Why can't we just be open to question the theory? But maybe we are, I don't know. But that would be where I'm coming from in that area. By the way, this is my pastor growing up in Edmonton and haven't seen him in 35 years, Phil Jorgensen.
And I had this question for Larry, because I think it was the year before I left Edmonton, I'd been down to a favorite place, the Trochu Ferry, east of Olds, and it's so rich with dinosaur fossils there, and there was a ditch. Wasn't on a farmer's land, wasn't crown land, it was a ditch. And so I helped myself to all sorts of many, many dinosaur bones there. And I think I had 200 of them to give to Sunday school students one Sunday there in Edmonton. I wondered if he remembered that. But I did feel I wanted to add something to what Mr. Forsyth was raising. There's a lot of Christian bashing, always has been, always will be, that's fine. But some of the militant atheists haven't run the world so well either, if you think of Stalin or Chairman Mao, or who was the communist leader in Cambodia in the killing fields, Adolf Hitler.
Got a question?
Yeah, I wanted to ask him if he'd seen that. But the other thing I know, the question was, last week we had a presentation, and he didn't talk about the why that Shillington, or the how that Shillington brought up, the how of natural selection was never mentioned, just these many trees or bushes. Do you remember when I gave out dinosaur bones, or did you skip Sunday school?
No, I don't remember that, but I must have skipped church. There must have been a football game on or something that morning. Well, again, I look at the fossil record, and there doesn't seem to be connections, but. You know, maybe as we go on, there will be, but I just don't see the connections. You know, like I said before, there is variation of character in a gene pool, and so you have variation within a species. But the DNA in dogs and the DNA in cats are limited, and the twain shall never meet. And we see that limitation in the DNA. We see that limitation. A dog will not be a cat, and a cat will not be a dog. There is variation within the gene pool. We see that with dogs, variation with dogs and breeding and so on and so forth. But it doesn't cross over, in my humble opinion. So.
Thanks. I'm Myrna Green. I'm thinking back to your very first slide and wondering how you get from... human beings developed sort of through evolution to no purpose, no hope, no future kind of thing. I don't see the connection, or I don't see why that follows logically.
Well, I guess it would be logical if God used evolution. I just don't believe he did. I think it's an archaic system, and I it would be logical, yes. I mean, if God used evolution, if you want to believe that, then that's fine. Because then there is meaning, because God has used that method. I just I don't see that in Scripture. I don't see it personally in the evidence that he used evolution. But if I'm not saying that if you're a theistic evolutionist that you have no purpose, I'm not saying that at all. But I'm just saying that when you look, what I appreciate about guys like Dawkins is that they're willing to say, okay, the neo-Darwinian theory is that there is no God, we're just here by random chance, then there is no purpose. And they're at least man enough to admit that. They're, you know, because a lot of people don't want to admit. Just because you want to have purpose in life doesn't necessarily mean there is purpose. So there is meaning when God comes into the picture, to answer your question.
My name is Graham Greenlee. I think I'm still a little bit confused as well. Larry, I believe fossil records and evolution and whatnot show that the dinosaurs were on Earth millions of years before man. So you state that God created the heaven and earth and everything on it. When or how did man get here? Did God come back again to create man?
Well, let me just read this, because this is called Soft Tissue Dangerous Discovery. And this is from Discover Magazine. Maybe this will help you a little bit. The notion that dinosaurs died off 65 million years ago has become a serious roadblock. And with Dr. Mary Schweitzer's discovery of fresh dinosaur tissue, this is in Discover Magazine a couple of years ago, when this shy paleontologist found soft, fresh-looking tissue inside a T-Rex femur, there was a curious unwillingness in the scientific community to believe the finding, even to the point that Dr. Schweitzer was having a hard time trying to get her work published in scientific journals. I had one reviewer tell me that he didn't care what the data said. He knew what I was finding wasn't possible. Why? Because dinosaurs supposedly died out 65 million years ago. I wrote back and said, well, what data would convince you? And he said, none. Schweitzer can understand why so many people are skeptical. If you take a blood sample and you stick it on a shelf, you have nothing recognizable in it in about a week. She says, adding, so why would there be anything left in dinosaurs? So if man and dinosaurs and mammals, and I've got lots of evidence that mammals and dinosaurs live together, why is this a problem for paleontologists? Because they've had this mindset that dinosaurs died out 65 million years ago. How would you find soft dinosaur tissue in a dinosaur bone that died out 65 million years ago? And they're finding more of this all the time. In fact, let me just say this. Schweitzer recounts how after the first discovery, she noticed the T-Rex skeleton from the Hell Creek, Montana, had a distinctive odor to it. And when she mentioned this to longtime paleontologist Jack Horner, he said, oh yeah, all Hell Creek bones smell, the smell of death. Well, why would you have the smell of death 65 million years ago? And I can go on with evidence for mammals and dinosaurs living together. In fact, do I have just very quickly here? Well, by the way, I just want to say, when I was at the Calgary Science Museum, very quickly, they said if the asteroid had not come and hit the dinosaurs, this is what they were saying that some paleontologists believe, if the asteroid had not come and hit the Earth and wiped out the dinosaurs, chances are dinosaurs would continue to evolve. And then they showed this picture, and he said, this is what we would look like today. That's what they said. And, you know, they were teaching that to adults and children. And now, these are just some paleontologists, but that's what they were saying. In New Nature, study argues that the demise of dinosaurs did not fuel the rise of mammals. Devising a new tree of life for 4,500 species of mammals using molecular evolutionary trees and an intentional, sorry, international team of researchers challenges the prevailing hypothesis that mass extinction of dinosaurs 65 million years ago played a major role in the diversification of mammals. The author shows that many of the genetic ancestors of the mammals we see around us today existed 85 million years ago. This wouldn't be a problem for creationists because mammals and dinosaurs and land-dwelling creatures lived at the same time. Dinosaur-eating dog. It's about the size of a modern dog. Considering the specimen, scientists suggest the period in which these animals lived may have been much different than is commonly understood as the age of the dinosaurs. Scientists say that the animal's last meal probably was first proof that mammals hunted small dinosaurs. It contradicts conventional evolutionary theory. It appears that at least some smaller dinosaurs had to look over their shoulders for snarling, meat-eating mammals claiming their turf. This new evidence gives a drastically new picture, says paleontologist Min Jin of the American Museum of Natural History. They found a beaver with the dinosaurs, beaver-type creature with dinosaurs. They found placental mammals in Gibson Island, Australia. And so they're constantly rearranging the evolutionary tree. This is not a problem for those who believe in what Genesis has to say, but this is a real problem for those who adhere to that evolutionary tree, that that mammals came after reptiles and so on and so forth.
My folks come from Ukraine, and I'd like to ask a question. It makes you wonder, why did they ever come from Ukraine to Canada? And when I read, for instance, I think either one of these, evolution or creation, bears fruit. On the American penny, I think the reason why America is great, I'm going to ask this man if that's true or not, why America was great, because they had a foundation was, what does it say on the American penny? In God we trust. What about Canada's motto? What's Canada's motto? Where did it come from? Psalms 72, verse 8. That's where we have Canada's motto from. He shall have dominion from sea to sea. My parents come from Russia, and they went to the bloody revolution, and that nation decided to take evolution and atheism. And you know what happened? She collapsed. And there's a good reason for it collapsed. It collapsed so badly that when Gorbachev and the KGBs got together just before they collapsed, they contacted a number of American Christian organizations. Says, come on, see us. We want to know what the real our real problem is. Is that true or is it not?
Well, I know. I guess I would agree that purely atheistic nations does not have a very good record. You know, so I guess I would agree with you on that one.
Just here's the book right here.
Other people coming, so we'll ask you to.
Philip Yancey praying with KGB, the startling report from a shattered empire.
Next question.
Okay. Next question.
Art Sanford, and Larry, thank you for your talk. I do not pretend to be a scholar or an intellectual, but I am a Christian because of my belief, and I accept Christ's word. But I have two questions that often come to my mind when I'm talking about the Christian life. One is, if we are to believe in evolution, go back to the known world, 8,000 years, where we have written histories. There is no sign of any species that has evolved and changed in that time. If we are to believe in evolution, why has that happened? The second question I have, when you take a look at the species today on the earth, you can interbreed a lion and a tiger, a cow and a moose, and you can get an offspring. But the offspring is always sterile and cannot reproduce. They take the horse and the mule, the horse and the donkey, you know, and they can take certain breeds, but they do not reproduce. And the second part of that is, when you look at man, they've never been able to use the sperm of man and produce it with an animal and get a mix. So is there where does evolution fit into that pattern?
lion and tiger would be a little difficult, but well, essentially, I would agree that, like I said, there is within the gene pool there is characteristics that is limited within species, and we see that. So that's about all I have to say on that.
Well, we have reached 1:30, so I want everyone to please, first of all, give Larry a great big round of applause for coming in. Coming and sharing with us. And just a reminder again about next week when Jim Harding will be coming and speaking about the global nuclear system and Canada's deadly secret. Thank you to all of you for attending.